Welcome to What's Your Poison? This is John Savage. You can go to johnsavage.com to see all the episodes, the many, many episodes. Also, please rate, subscribe, and share because it'll be good for my ego. Episode 50 of season 2 of What's Your Poison? That's 50 episodes. That's 50 hours of interviews. 50. That's a year. We're a year old, actually. We're over a year old. I reminisced the very first one we did. Well, not the first one. This actually started off as part of a radio show on the I a few years ago. But when I started it again for lockdown, how it started was Nick Rabinowitz. I had an interview set up with Cajisa Lodiga. He was an hour late, so I sat here on Facebook Live, actually, at the time, drank a lot of whiskey until I was trying on wigs and playing music. It was very bad. And Nick Rabinowitz jumped on and said, I hear you're missing a guest. Do you want to chat to me? I was like, hell yeah. And then was born the first episode. Here we are, 50 in. Super excited. I've made a lot of promises I haven't kept, including some merchy stuff. But I want you to know I appreciate you guys who listen to the show and who give me comments. And yeah, I get really nice feedback from the show. And I love the show. And I can't tell you about that. There's a TV show coming as very shortly in August, which I can't talk about yet, but I'll tell you then. Anyway, episode 50. Here we is, baby. The world is falling apart. Jacob Zuma's people are tearing this country into tiny pieces. There's a giant pandemic, you may have heard, but on we go. Despite these lockdowns, we find the dregs of whiskey and wines, and we make the entertainment just for your pleasure. Matthew Mull. we speak about it in there. I had a tiny, tiny, tiny insignificant role. Myself and I'm sure it was Kath Grenfell. Right at the beginning of his career, he entered a demo competition for some Converse competition, and we were the judges, and he won that. And some might say we made his career, and some might say he made it himself. More likely the second one. What a lovely guy. Like, what is nice about, we go through a lot of topics on this thing, and we keep it quite organic, very consistent, lovely human being, patient and nice and humble, for someone who's so crazy talented and successful, just really down to earth. We speak politics. I don't know why, it was my idea. I have one whiskey and I turn into a different animal. So we start to, musicians should never talk politics because we sound dumb, and so we do. We talk about social media, we talk about his friends. We talk about how his approach to songwriting, that's quite interesting, and how he's looking at TikTok talent. We talk about big egos in the industry. But really, one of my biggest things is I wanted to, he's got such a nice, squeaky, clean image in this industry as the golden boy, the good boy. He's just nothing bad to say about him. And I had to break him. And I wanted a scandal. My whole idea was to make sure that if anyone ever Googled Matthew Mull's scandal, that this podcast would come up. And we spoke about fabricating it, and then we didn't need to, because the enigmatic, legendary, and lovely Matthew Mull created a real-life scandal on this show. Guys, enjoy Matthew Mull on What's Your Poison? What's Your Poison is proudly brought to you by Whiskey Brother. WhiskeyBrother.com. They make great whiskeys. They sell them. You buy them. You drink them. WhiskeyBrother.com. Matthew Mull.
How's it going?
Welcome. Welcome. Lovely to... I think we have mutual friends, but we don't really know each other much. Although...
No, yeah. I mean, we've done a lot of stuff like in passing together, and so and we've chatted a couple times on an interview, but I'm looking forward to this one.
Well, this one started already, so we're in it. This is it. It's just drinking and talking shit. That's the format, and it's worked really well so far.
Amazing.
I do know. Okay, well, let's start with drinking.
Amazing.
What usually, so how this show is supposed to work is you choose your poison of choice, the thing that you love the most. But yes. I know this lockdown has fucking stopped that ability. So you've had to get something in your cupboard.
Yeah.
So
totally.
What are you drinking tonight?
So I'm having wine. But I've actually stopped. I've stopped drinking as much as I used to. So it's always like a special occasion, which is now. Normally, my favorite thing ever is a Jack Daniels.
Me too.
I love shots. Shots are my thing. Oh, you're a Jack man.
Jack to the grave. What I do is I bring different whiskeys each time. I don't know if you've seen the TV show Peaky Blinders.
Yes. Oh, man, I love Peaky Blinders.
So I got this whiskey because it says Peaky Blinder on it and thought I would give it a bash.
I hear they're coming out with a Peaky Blinders movie now. So there's not going to be another season, just a movie to end it off.
But wasn't the last season ended like 5 years ago? It's a bit late for a...
It was ages ago. Yeah, it's going to be strange. Yeah. It's too late for another season, I guess. So maybe a movie makes sense. Cheers.
Nice to chat to you. So I want to ask you a question about, you know, you just said to me you've toned down the drinking.
Yeah.
But we've got friends. We've got friends in common. And I'm told that your line that I'm toning down the drinking and all that's behind me is like a line that you use a lot, but it's not the case. You'll often say, come on.
Yeah,
Some of your inner circle says like they know that the Matthew Mole line is like, listen, that life's behind me. Let's just go for a quiet dinner, and then boom, the shots come out.
Wow.
And the
shit goes bad. Okay, that's interesting. Well, I'd love to know who said this, but it sounds like that's maybe something that's definitely happened. But I can't this time it's true because I ran my first half marathon like 2 days ago. So that was my inspiration, was to get fitter and healthier. I mean, not that I've never been an unhealthy person, but that was just one of the things I thought. If I don't drink much alcohol, I'll be less stressed about the whole bans and everything going on that come and go. And also I'll feel fitter.
Well, I'll give you a clue. That same person, here's something you can deny. What's the opposite to deny? What happened to me?
I can accept.
Is it true that you're on a WhatsApp group with the guys from Short Straw and Al Bear that is totally the whole purpose of the WhatsApp group is to find pictures that look like vaginas?
This is 100% true. And I don't actually know why I'm on this group. I've literally never contributed anything. I'm going to show you. Do you want to see? Am I allowed to show you whatever's been happening there? So let's find it. So I think I once played a show with Short Straw and Albert, best humans in the whole world. Yeah. And it doesn't surprise me that they told you this news. But so I'm on this group and I feel bad because I don't think I've ever contributed a picture or anything, but they sent some very it's creative stuff here. I'll just find something. I don't even know what to find. I don't even know if I'm sure they wouldn't mind, right?
I mean
this is hectic. This is somebody. This isn't quite. I mean, there's like stuff, like random stuff, like that's someone's hairstyle.
<Is it? laughs> Okay, so this is the general. But I thought it was gonna be more like, look, there's a dog's face that looks like a vagina. I didn't realize. Okay.
Yeah. No, so it is that. It is that. It's more like a random. It's like random stuff that they said. I don't know. I guess. I try. I don't know. I feel like I'm not as active on that group as I should be. So I feel like I'm not a good friend to them.
You're definitely missing out, I think.
Yeah, apparently. Oh man,
are you in Hout Bay? Hey, you're here in Cape Town.
I'm in Cape Town, but I'm in Fishhook, just around the corner from Hout Bay. But you are Cape Town based.
I'm up the road. I'm in sort of the southern suburbs area.
Yes, nice.
How are you feeling about? I mean, this shit that's going on is, I don't know what's going on in the country right now. It's blowing my mind.
Yeah, it's so crazy, man. I mean, I don't even know. I've tried to wrap my head around it. But it keeps changing and it's very up and down. But yeah, I mean, it's been okay. It hasn't been easy. Just like for everybody else in the entire world. It doesn't matter what industry they're in. It's been a weird time, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've been trying to figure it out. For me, what's been cool is just having a bit more of a consistent schedule, whatever that schedule is. Just being able to spend more, like, consistently more time with my wife, and being able to kind of commit to things that are like a month into the future. In the past, I haven't been to a lot of my friends' weddings, so I haven't been able to go to weddings now. But just being able to commit to things like that that happen like a
You'll
month
be able
into
to
the
be
future.
A better friend,
exactly. So that's been a good thing. But otherwise, yeah, I'm just looking forward to live music to be a thing again, where people aren't scared to go out in public.
But aside from lockdown, I'm talking about the madder shit that's going on in Joburg and Durban at the moment.
Oh, you mean right now?
Yeah, no, I'm like, what the f-? This is really like, as if shit isn't bad enough. Like, what's happening now is terrifying.
Oh my gosh, it's insane. And then every morning we wake up, it's even more insane. I don't know what happens during the night. But yeah, it looks like people are, I don't know what to even think about it. Everyone, it looks like the thing everyone's saying is that it's just a lot of desperation now that's turned into criminality, is the word that's being thrown around a lot. But yeah, it's looking bad. It's ridiculous. None of it makes sense.
It doesn't make sense. I got this, I'm not political in any way, but I have this idea. Like, this is what's been in my mind, and I haven't expressed it. So this is definitely the wrong format, too. But if you think about, this is my little pet theory. You look at America, what's gone on, and it's so like fucked over there. And part of it is like, okay, so there's all these dark forces playing roles, and what they're seeing is, like these dudes are looting. So like last year, where Black Lives Matter were like looting the place, and there were all these other things like controlling these groups and going, oh, you can move the political needle by doing these things. And then someone here went, oh, there's a good idea. I'm going to do the same thing, because I don't know if it was Zuma's imprisonment that sparked this outrage, or that it's an orchestrated outrage in order to put pressure. Yeah, I don't know. Because it would be a brilliant move by Zuma if he did it on purpose, if he was like, I'm going to put
this
so much
plan.
Pressure.
This is what must happen.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. But I don't know.
I mean,
that's coming out of
Me neither. You know? I guess well, it sounds like a good theory. I mean, I know zero as well, but it seems like the guy, I mean, he must have some level of sharpness to him. He's not just a complete moron.
I think he is a political genius. The only stuff I've read about him is like back in the day he was the head of the the underground secret service motherfuckers, the guys who they did all this bad shit. And obviously he's a political genius. It doesn't come across as smart stuff. And this looks like a political genius move, not a move of a Dumbo, you know?
Yeah, exactly. If it is a whole orchestrated thing, then jeez. I mean, everyone's talking about it and everyone's seeing it, so... Jeez,
and for anyone listening to this, neither me or Matthew are experts in any shape for
yes,
this particular topic. Don't quote us.
Oh, man. No, yeah. Just listen and laugh. But it basically has been crazy. I'm nervous to be updated on what happens during the night and seeing how tomorrow morning looks. But I don't know. I don't even know. It's just craziness, basically.
So you've had lockdown's been quite cool for you because you got to focus a bit more on being a friend, being a husband.
Yeah. It's a lockdown.
How long have you been married for? Not that long.
I've been married for 6 years this year.
Oh, jeez. So,
but yeah, not very long. I don't know if that's long or not long.
That's quite long.
Short for some people.
And how's that going?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been very good. I mean, my wife is... Currently, she's in the UK. She's working there. She's just there for a few weeks. She's there, and apparently, I don't know much about what's going on in the UK, but besides what she tells me, but it seems like they're doing well over there. So it's good to know that other parts of the world are coming through I don't even like to say the word COVID, but it's good to see that other parts of the world are making it through. So I'm sure we'll get there.
Is she based there? Well, how she's long not. Has
she's
been
based.
There?
She's based in South Africa. She's just been there for a few weeks, 2 weeks or so, and she comes back in about 2 weeks as well. So she's just there for work, yeah. And it's I guess it's. I'm glad that she's there. It looks like she's safe there for a little period, and she can have fun because they're also a lot more free with their restrictions are a little bit more free at the moment. So yeah.
Well,
but this is great.
I don't know what is great.
The fact that we can chat like this. I mean,
this is great.
So it feels like we're hanging out in the same
place. Yeah, I started the show during lockdown because I just was like working my ass off and was, you know, just didn't have you. No one was going out. And so it started off on Friday nights. I get totally wasted and then just invite people onto the show. And then it just like it blew up. And then now this is what I just do each week. It's really fun.
Oh,
I love it.
Amazing. But that's your vibe is working your ass off.
Yeah, well, this is not that. If it's not obvious, there's no agenda here except to have a drink with you and talk.
Nah, I love it. I love that so much.
And we'll talk about it. There's been some really amazing things. Like this week, the show that I just had last week, I did the last ever interview with Steve Kekana. And then he passed away before we even finished the interview. And then I've got this really like amazing story with him. And then it was crazy.
That is crazy.
He is amazing. He was busy working on his 47th album. So what do you think about that?
that doesn't compute. I can't compute that. That's incredible. Yeah, just imagine all the gold in there.
Yeah, no, that guy's gold. I wanted to. Yeah. I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you must. The one thing that where our paths crossed that I know about was that you're very the Converse competition.
Yes,
right at the beginning.
About it. Yeah,
I was a judge on that.
Yes, I remember.
And I it's weird because I'm not just saying this now that you're like a megastar, but there was that demo, that sort of rough demo that you did.
Yes.
Was so memorable even then. Like it was so out left of center. The production was crazy. I think I met Albert at the same time.
Yes, we both kind of started around the same time. Yeah. Oh wow, that's awesome. Jeez, well thanks. No, there was actually a Rocking the Daisies. I was thinking about it literally like half an hour ago before we got started. About the first time I met you in person. I don't know if you'd remember it, but it was at a Rocking the Daisies. It was like 2012, I think. I think it was 2012, which was the same year as that Converse thing. So it was just after I had won it. And then I think me and you had spoken like over somewhere. It was like one or two messages that we had exchanged. And then I met you for the first time just after that was all announced at Rocking the Daisies. And I'd just come off stage. I just played my first show. I think somehow I ended up being able to play there that year. I don't know how that worked out. And then I've never forgotten this. It's crazy. But for some reason, I've never forgotten that you came up to me afterwards and you told me how much you really loved the sound of the kick drum that I was playing. And I was like, oh, my word, he loved the kick drum. It sounded so cool. And but I don't know why it was. Wow. I've never forgotten that. But and that you had been there and you were watching the show. So, that was 2012. That's almost 10 years ago. That's 9 years ago. That's crazy. Orlando Bloom was there that year as well.
I remember that. That was really weird.
It was weird. It was very weird.
I think he was shooting. He was here shooting that movie.
Oh yeah, he must have been. I guess yeah. I didn't even think about that. I just thought, Orlando Bloom's here, and he chased everyone. All his security told all the bands that they couldn't be backstage anymore. Oh well, he's Orlando Bloom, I guess.
And you're doing amazing stuff, dude. I loved your balloon campaign.
Thanks.
Down with you, Chuck. That was really beautiful and smart. I love that.
Wow,
I love the way
you
think about that shit. It's cool.
Thanks. Social media is a strange thing. So you've got to just try and do strange things to make it work, I think.
That's the thing. I think that's the part of the connection. You and the Albert people and to a certain extent, the Short Straw, but really the two of you, like... other than being amazing artists, which is undeniable, your approach to social media, like is really like effortlessly brilliant. Like you are social media gurus. I think you know the other one is Jeremy Loops. That's the other one.
He's a genius, man.
You all pretend to be artists, but actually you're social media geniuses.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I guess there are a lot of like bands that do it well and they come across like they're just winging it, but actually it's like it's a really good plan. That's what it seems like. Like Jeremy Loops is the king of social media. I feel like he's so good and it's so natural and organic. But yeah, no one has ever written better social media captions copy than any of the Albert posts that have gone out.
If you follow Kyle on Instagram, his like home holiday Instagram posts are the best thing I've ever seen. Like just that is amazing.
Yes. You see, and I think Kyle was one of the geniuses, but one of the big geniuses behind the Albert captions. I used to actually tell Kyle, I need you to write my captions for social media, please. But
I got him when I started the iRadio. He was doing all of our social stuff. And he was brilliant at it.
He's so good, man. Yeah.
So where do you, your craft, your songwriting is so interesting and unique. And during lockdown, I'm interested to know if you have changed anything or being sort of off the road has changed how you approach your music or.
Yes, that's a good point, because I think for a lot of bands, being able to play songs on stage really kind of shape how you finish writing them and how you take them into studio. But I think for me, I've always that has affected it for sure. But I've always kind of written songs by myself, like in like a weird, I guess that's like sounds so cliche and arty, but that's how I've always been. I've always kind of like fiddled around a lot with myself and just gotten in my head and kind of written songs and cut stuff up and done all of that. Whenever I do the writing process, that's kind of how it goes. And then eventually I record the song and there's the final version. And then I get to a gig and then I play it. Then I realize, oh, I should have changed like a million things. So I'm just kind of used to that, I think, is like having the final song before I even really play it properly on stage, because it's just me. So I don't really have a band that I can go and practice with. Until it comes time to going on tour, then I'll kind of get like the session drummer or whoever, and we'll get into a room and then I'll plan it all out. And only then will I realize, oh man, I should have changed things when I wrote the song. But what I like about that is that it makes the live version a different experience to listening to the recorded version. So for me, that's kind of been all right. The creative process hasn't really changed. I've learned a lot more over the years, but luckily it's been something I've been sort of used to. It's like just being in my own head.
Is it like, the way you've described it, like a bit of a producer writer, like you're not sitting there on a guitar and hacking it out. You're like throwing ideas out and then pasting them together on a computer.
Exactly. That kind of thing. I mean, I try to sit down with only a guitar or a piano or something as much as possible and take it as far as possible, because I think a good song can be amazing song. Just with one instrument, just maybe even a cappella. But it's hard not to get obsessed over all the production-y stuff. But yeah, that's totally how I do it. I totally like,
you know,
cut
what,
stuff up. And
it's interesting that the two guitarists that I have loved, well, I'm older than you, so like Slash, I was obsessed with as a kid. Like I was Slash is how I learned to play guitar, like with Slash, and then Pink Floyd, David Gilmour, right?
Yeah.
The interesting thing that I never forgot is how they wrote solos.
Oh, wow.
They weren't shredders. They'd go into the studio. Yes.
And
they would put the 8
it.
Bars on. No, and they would play loads and loads of stuff, and then they'd go into studio and they'd paste together a moment.
Oh,
there.
No
they'd
ways.
Create them exactly what you were describing, and then they'd go back and play the solo. So they would like find all the stuff, particularly David Gilmour. This is all the Pink Floyd guitar line. Find
That's
the thing,
awesome.
Try all the stuff, make all these melodies, and then create the melody like an orchestration, figure out what the solo is, and then go and play it. So it was never like wiggly, wiggly, woo, and then that was it. So
that's super interesting. I had no idea. And it makes sense. I mean, when you're in studio, you're not trying to fool people into thinking you can play the whole thing properly. You're just trying to get like the most dynamic and most amazing takes. So that's really cool to know.
That's what I'm saying. That's what am I on the same page? That's what you're describing as
totally.
How you're writing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally do that.
Puke it all out, put it on tape, and then find
choose the best parts. And yeah. So that's totally it. But I never would have thought that, like, because when I first started out, I always used to think I hope I'm not cheating when I do things like that, like the Pink Floyd solo kind of thing. But I guess you're not. You're just being creative. But it makes me feel extra like good knowing that legends like them do that for guitar solos. So I mean, that's pretty cool.
But it also explains, and the same with you actually now, that those David Gilmour solos, the melodies were just insane. They were so crafted. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then that's super creative. Because I guess some people might argue, no, that's not creative. He just played a whole bunch and then they chose the best parts. But that's very creative to go and like find a whole lot of parts from different takes and make it sound like it's one take. I don't know. I think that's awesome. Wow.
You know, I was one of the funny things about you, and again, this is just spitballing stuff, is that I did do 12 seconds of research before I called you. And you know, your reputation as being like the nicest guy in the industry and like the squeaky guy. I'm sure you know that. So what I decided to do is I Googled Matthew Mole scandal.
Oh, really? Oh, no, there's a cop. There's some cop in the UK that's, you'll find bad stuff.
Oh, no, but not you.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Oh, no, well, there's some policeman when I was told this. There's some policeman, I think this was like 10 years ago, though.
Okay, fuck it. Now I don't know. Well, I'd love to Googling that now. Policeman.
Or something like that from a UK policeman that, so there's probably scandal stuff.
Oh.
I don't know. I'd love to know what you found.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying his name. He was Matthew Mole. No.
Same Mole. Oh yeah.
No. I was talking about you.
Yes.
So I've got two things about you, man.
Oh really?
The first thing that comes up is you in 2014, telling people not to call you Justin Bieber.
Oh wow.
Why that's a scandal, I don't know. But that's the first thing that comes up.
Okay, that's not bad.
No. And then the other one is about someone who has a mole whose name is Matthew. So that wouldn't think. So you did good there.
Okay, cool. Okay, that's great to know. Sure. So I mean,
but maybe if you can think of something scandalous, right? That yes. I can make the heading of this podcast and then get, if anyone ever Googles Matthew Mole scandal, this episode comes up and you have to confess to the thing. So have you got anything you can confess to me about?
Yes. Okay. yes. I might have to think this one through, but I'm sure I could think of something.
Because I mean, even the vagina WhatsApp line, you were like, haven't contributed. So it's, there's nothing there.
That's true. Luckily I'm clean there. But no, there's definitely got to be something. I mean, I say a lot of, whenever I speak, especially, I mean, I haven't played a show obviously for a while, but just whenever I like this is dangerous talking together for an hour, because whenever I speak, I just say dumb stuff all the time. So so I've totally said something probably that I regret. I don't know when, but there must be something.
Maybe we have to make something up. Maybe we can put something into your mythology so that it goes and, you know, finds its way into Wikipedia and then other interviews ask you about this thing.
Yes. Okay.
So, I haven't thought this through, so I haven't got an idea yet.
I can totally think of something though while we're talking. Yeah. I don't know what. Right.
I want one by the end. And if,
okay.
If not one, I'll make one up and you just have to confess to it.
And that's got to be it. Yeah. My gosh.
Tell me a bit more. I know we started on this just now, but this new single of yours, I'm With You, is fucking epic, bro.
Thanks, man.
I don't know. Also, the shit you're doing on Instagram, you got that little magic thing, man.
Oh, thank you.
I'd love to know more about your magic thing.
Oh, no. Sounds like there's a scandal there somewhere. thank you. Thanks for even hearing the song, listening to the song. I don't know. I think this time being able to just obsess, like we were saying, obsess over the songwriting and stuff by myself for as much time as I want to without any pressure that I have to take new songs on tour or anything. There's been not as much pressure on songwriting during this whole strange time in the world. But so that's been helpful. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's the songwriting, like writing. I still, there's certain songs that I want to write that I haven't written yet. I don't know if I ever will, but like I haven't, I sort of, they're like there in my head, but I don't know what they need to sound like or look like or whatever. But that's kind of where I'm aiming. I'm just going to continue going until one day I feel like, hey, I think I'm tapping into it. But I think songwriting is like a weird thing where you get lucky if you somehow kind of stumble upon a good idea that you found somewhere in your head, then and you manage to kind of articulate it in a way that people can listen to it, then I think it's a lucky thing to be able to do that, where people actually enjoy what came out of your head. So that's what I'm trying to do whenever I write a song. But most of the 90%,
you write for other people at all?
I never have.
Is it something you might be interested in doing?
Yeah. I've always been keen on that. But whenever I write a song, I always think, oh, but this could work for Matthew Moll. So I've never actually written one with someone else in mind, or just to kind of purposefully write for someone else. But I'd love to do that, because I feel like there would be way less pressure as well, because you'd write a better song, I think, because you wouldn't be obsessing over all the little details about why this shouldn't work for a Matthew Moll song. Songwriting is an amazing thing, though.
Do you find collaborations easy or difficult?
I find them super difficult. I think I just struggle because I haven't done it enough. That's the only reason. The few kind of co-writing sessions I've tried, I really struggle to kind of express my ideas, because I think they're all bad. So I don't ever want to tell the person, hey, what about this? What about this? So I think I never really end up contributing enough when you take
a back seat. Is that
exactly? Yeah.
Interesting. Maybe you should do more of that. I think you'd be good at it. And it's fun. It's fun if you can relax into it, I think.
I've heard it's the most fun ever. So, yeah, I think that's it. I just need to do more of it and just kind of get comfortable with sharing ideas with other people.
What do you do if you write a song that's like a punk song, like something completely out of the Matthew Moll genre? What do you do with it?
I'd love to write a punk song or like a metal song or something. But then I get it out of my head, and then it sits there and I never go back to it ever again. I think there's a few songs. I mean, before I ever like figured out the whole one man acoustic thing, I didn't figure it out. But before I kind of settled on that, because that's kind of like my first album was very like acoustic guitar and organic-y sounding, and like the kind of thing you can pull off as one person on stage. But before I kind of settled on that idea, I loved writing stuff like punk stuff, or I mean, I didn't write punk songs, but stuff that would be awesome to play with like a three-piece band, where it's like super high energy on stage. But I mean, I guess the songs probably sucked, though. That's why I could only ever write songs that I can play on an acoustic guitar.
You could one day just do like one album.
Yeah.
Like
punk.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. That'll be the dream. One day.
Yeah. Just
stick it. I'm glad you told me that.
And then this is going to be really. Oh, before I get there, I wanted to ask you, what about, are you like, because COVID has sort of changed how everyone. Sorry, I know you hate the word. Everybody thinks about the industry. How's your kind of business mind gone? Have you got side hustles, or are you just cruising through it and having to sort of stick into royalty mode? What is your game plan, or how have you managed to?
Yeah, I haven't like started any side hustles or anything. I thought of like ideas. I wanted to get more into the production side of things with music. Because I've never produced properly. I mean, I've produced a lot of my own music, but I've always wanted to get more into that. So I've been like chatting with a lot of
amazing men.
I don't know. Thank you, but I don't know. I don't think I know enough. I need to learn more. But what I have been doing over the last year is like there's a whole lot of amazing young kids in South Africa and in the whole world on like TikTok and Instagram and everywhere that these like. People that are amazing songwriters, and they're just kind of what they have is TikTok, and they've got like these huge followings on TikTok because everyone's using TikTok. But then I don't think they even realize how good they really are. Mm-hmm. So I've been chatting to some of them and just kind of chatting about song ideas and like
genius. That's genius.
But because these guys are geniuses, so it would just be cool to if I wanted to try and help someone produce a song, that's kind of the ideal like person. It's like someone that's still trying to figure out their sound, but they are amazing songwriters already. They don't need any help with songwriting. And that's the most important thing, is like a good song. And then it's these guys that are kind of like, they're very open to learning, and they're very open to kind of figuring out their sound still, whatever that means. But so that kind of thing. So basically over this long period, I mean, other than working on my own songs and songwriting and music, I've been trying to figure out other ways of still maintaining something creative, but for other people, not for me. So that's been my thinking over the last year.
That's cool. Are you technical, or are you just talking about like crafting stuff, or is it you like the knobs and the buttons and the EQ?
I love the knobs and the buttons. Yeah. I love it all. I love the creative side of it, but also the EQs, compressions, buttons, all of that nerdy stuff. I love that as well. That's fun stuff. But yeah, so that's kind of what I would think of. I mean, so oh, basically cool. I would like, there's like one or two guys, for example, there's one guy and he posted a bunch of videos of all these amazing songs. And all he says is like, yeah, I wrote this song the other day. And it's this like hit, flipping hit song that no one knows, obviously, because he's someone that just posted it on social media. And what I love is just to kind of listen to him play, listen to someone just with their acoustic guitar, play it. And there we go. It's an amazing song as is. But then like, you can think of so many ideas with all the nerdy stuff, all the EQing and compression and production stuff to throw in there. And then, I don't know, so I love that kind of thing. But it's just amazing how many amazing young songwriters there are in this country and in the world that people don't know about. And
how have you managed to, I mean, I've been, you know, this is going to sound another terrible, weird thing to say. Like, I've been in this business a long time.
that's a good thing.
How have you managed to stay? I mean, I think from what I can see, but reading between the lines, there are some big artists in this country who are spouting big games, and very quietly, I think you're probably bigger than all of them. And as someone who is so incredibly successful and must get stopped all day long, how have you managed to just stay so fucking chill and cool and humble?
Well, I mean,
it's a rare quality in the industry.
That's what sucks. I mean, it sucks. I mean, thank you. That's a huge honor. Thank you so much. But it's horrible. Like my least favorite thing is meeting someone for the first time that like I've been a fan of their music or whatever, and then I meet them at a festival. It hasn't happened often at all. But I haven't met, if I go and like I play at a festival, whatever, where they're playing, and then I see that they aren't actually a very nice person. It's so horrible. It's kind of like, oh, now I don't like your music anymore. Or I don't like it as much as I thought I did.
And well, there's like, a saying, like meeting your idols is the worst. I don't know what the saying is, but like it's the worst thing.
Yeah, I've heard this. It's some kind of saying. Yeah, it'll just ruin everything. Well, yeah, so that's the thing. Like, I don't understand that. I mean, it's like, I don't know what makes someone think that now suddenly because more people know who you are, you suddenly get to just be more entitled or more of a douche. Exactly. It doesn't make sense, but I don't know. I guess everyone's different.
I'll tell you, one of the funny things is, and you confirm it, is that my experience has always been the bigger and most more successful the artist is, the more chill and down to earth they are. But the guys in the middle who aren't there, they are fucking late. They are rude. They are rock stars. They like, I never want to work with them. They stick there and they're always like fucking trying too hard. And then once you get through that into that top echelon, dudes are always like pro and sweet and nice and the best.
Yes. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's amazing though. I mean, it's good to know because it shows that there's definitely something in that, because that must be part of what's gotten them to that. I don't know.
I agree with you. It's like the real icons, the Johnny Clegg's, whatever, the Parlophones, the Kaifus and Menu. Those oaks on you are mega stars. And it's like that's who awesome. You want to work with.
Totally. The people that are exactly. It's because I mean, something I've been learning is like, well, I mean, I don't know what it's like on the huge levels and stuff, but what I've been learning is like I just want to enjoy. This might, I don't want to go off topic, but Like, you just want to have good experience. That's all. You don't want to just work on something cool because to say that you did something cool. It's like the way I've been seeing an album, I've only done 3 albums. That's so few compared to 47. But but like when you record an album, it's such a cool thing for as a musician or an artist or band or whatever, for someone to do, to record an album, such a cool thing. And it's like a huge milestone in your career because you might only do 2 or 3 or sometimes even 1. Or 47, but I mean, that's rare probably. But just to make that moment like a cool, memorable experience, even if nothing happens with the album, no one hears the songs and no one likes any of the songs, at least that experience of putting that album together was a fun experience. That's because those are the moments that I look back on and I think, wow, that was fun when I recorded that album. Like the process of releasing the songs and all that is sometimes not fun because it's just stressful. And yeah. So it's like you're obsessing over numbers and all that stuff when you're releasing the music, but the recording process and all of that, it's so cool. So I look at it these days is like, I don't want to do the normal typical thing and just go into the studio and get it over with as quick as possible. And hopefully the album sounds good. I want to like make it an awesome experience where like I'll go away to like a cool Airbnb somewhere in like Knysna or whatever, somewhere cool for a month, and I set up my own stuff and it's like a fun experience. So that's kind of the thing I've been learning in this whole music industry is like the memorable things are the parts, like the fun experiences, the parts you're going to remember. So it's like with a douchey band or whatever, I'm not going to remember, or I'll remember it in a bad way, but you want to remember the good parts. So like when you meet the good people, I don't know, it makes a big difference, basically. Just filling my your career and your time in the music industry with good memories.
It's so interesting because I wish I'd known this. For me, the biggest regret in our career when I was in a band was that we never, well, I don't think I was having fun. I was only later. So like the big learning lesson for me was in the cassette days.
Yes.
There was so much pressure to be, like we weren't in it for, we were like, we're going to be the biggest band in the world. Nothing's going to stop us. Rah, rah, rah. Every step we took, everything had that agenda. And we were like in that fucking thing. Years later, I decided for fun to start a 13-piece rock Motown band, dress up in a gold lycra suit and a afro and call myself Disco Dave. It was the best gig of my life. I had so much fun. And it was.
Oh my gosh.
And I realized in that moment, like, oh, that was what was missing. Like,
yes,
all that,
that's what it should have been.
Stuff. And I'm sure
but
we
you
would
think it
that.
Would have been. No, I don't know if you could have ever been. But do you think that it was more enjoyable because? No, man, no ways. Never, never. No, but do you think that was more enjoyable because you had gone through like the opposite side of it? Like trying to make everything work and all kinds of
things? I think I recognized that I went on the stage as Disco Dave and my sole agenda was to have a good time. And it was my best gig I've ever played.
That's amazing.
In cassette, every time we went on the stage, you know, I used to lose my voice a lot in big shows when we'd like play Coke Fest and stuff. And it was because I went on stage to like telling myself, when you walk on stage, this is the most important gig ever. You've got to knock this out of the park. So it was too
a lot
much
of pressure. Yeah.
And so I forgot to have fun in the time when it should have been fun. And the band ended early because we were just so fucking serious. We were so serious about everything.
Yeah,
so I love when you went. Sorry.
No. I was going to say, I guess it's good. It's hard to like to find that balance. And you saw both ends of it. So you'd be the pro at knowing what the balance is. I guess we always will be.
This is going to sound. I'm sorry to ask this question. I literally don't know. It's just. It's bouncing around in my head that very first day. And again, there's no offense. This is all with love and respect, you know, but that first demo that I heard of you so long ago, that was so powerful. It was super duper like religious heavy at the time.
Oh yeah, totally.
And I just wanted to see where, if you're still on that path, if you're off that path, or where that fits into your life. I don't know how to ask that in a
No, cool no, that is a cool way. No, yeah, that's, just, I mean, so those songs that I had written, like, I wrote that song when I was maybe 17 or 18 or so, which is 10, 11 years ago. And yeah, totally. I think I was still figuring out how to kind of articulate things that were going on in my life and in my head. So they probably sounded quite like in your face, religious, I guess. And I still, yeah, I haven't kind of my life and stuff hasn't drifted from that at all. It's, if anything, just become stronger. But I think I've just learned, I don't know if I have learned it. I'm just trying to learn how to just kind of, I don't ever want to sing songs about like stuff in my life and then push it onto other people's lives. I just want people to listen to songs and enjoy the songs. That's really it. I don't ever want to like teach anyone anything. I'm in no place at all to teach anyone a single thing. I need to learn everything. But that's what I've been trying to do, is like, I don't want to lose anything that I've wanted to write songs about, but I also want to be, I don't know if be careful is the right way to say it, but I just don't ever want to put anything in anyone's face and tell them, hey, you must listen to this religious music or whatever, and then I want you to take this away and learn this. And no, that's not at all what it is. I just write songs about what I experience and what I learn in life, but it's just me trying to figure things out. It's not me trying to teach other people what I'm learning, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I don't know, but the way you ask that is amazing. I don't think
it's a weird question to ask. It's hard. The two examples that I think of is that in the early days, I know when your career first started, I think you sort of got put in that 363 area.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But then you transcended that because you answered it really beautifully. You didn't run, you know, you didn't embrace the market. You carried on. You followed the music, if that makes
cool.
sense.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I guess that's all I've wanted to do.
Oh. And I think U2 is the other example, because if I'm not mistaken, they were a religious band when they started, and they took the same path as you.
They're like one of the world's biggest normal bands, not religious bands. Yeah, that's awesome. Mm. Okay, that's cool. I actually didn't know that about U2. So there we go. That's cool to know. Because I mean, you never want people to be put off by like stuff you're singing about. I mean, you don't want to, obviously, I don't know, it's a weird thing. It depends, like songwriting, it just depends how you want to kind of, what you want to say to people. Because I mean, you could not care about what anyone thinks, but at the same time, if you want people to hear your songs, you also need to keep in mind what people might, like how they might, what they might experience when they listen to your songs. I don't know. I'm not going to be able to control what people think, but I want them to feel some sort of positivity or upliftment. So I don't know, songwriting is a crazy thing.
Super cool,
but it's awesome. Yeah.
So how I mean, again, this is, again, I'm trying to figure out how to ask the questions that are in my head. How do you go on tour, drink mates? Remember, there might be a simple answer to this. How do you keep to your principles and you're a rock star? That's really got to be one of Earth's like hardest mysteries.
Yeah, well, I don't think any. Yeah, totally. But I think it all comes down to how much pressure you put on yourself. I don't know. That's what I think. But because like a lot of people, if you think about what everyone else is going to think about you, then you're just going on it. That's just a downward spiral, and you'll never succeed. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I never try to put too much pressure on myself in terms of like trying to live my cleanest life I've ever lived. I'll just try and be as real as I can be, and hopefully that's not a, like, doesn't come across badly. If it does, then I'll try and learn and kind of learn from any mistakes that, I don't know. But I mean, everyone, I don't know. I just, that's the main thing. Two things, not putting too much pressure on myself, or people not putting too much pressure on themselves as a person, and also just being real. That's all I want. I would love if one day, I don't think too much about this, but like about what people will say one day when I'm gone or whatever, when I'm dead. But that's very dark to say that. But I'd love it if people thought that I was real. So I don't know. So that's the most important thing. I don't try and put on some fancy kind of fake, I'm this perfect, because I'm definitely not. I don't know. Yeah, I try to be real. That's all.
Especially because of the big scandal, man. That's the thing.
Yeah, that still scandal. Oh, as soon as people hear about it,
whew.
It's going to be gonna be building this thing up.
Who are your close friends and what music do you listen to?
My close friends. So I think, you know, actually on the eye, Josh came with me. Josh Kleinsmith. I don't know if you know how well you know him from Gangs of Ballet.
Did we do a greatest songs death match?
Yes, we did.
Which I still think it needs to come back. So it's good. The best show, the greatest songs ever death match.
Oh my gosh, it was so good. That was incredible. And another one rule is you can't choose Bohemian Rhapsody, which is a good rule.
I forgot about that.
I mean, that was a great rule. I think.
Gangs of Ballet, Josh.
So Josh, I mean, and all of the guys are amazing, but Josh Kleinsmith has been a good friend of mine, especially because he's not, obviously not, Gangs of Ballet isn't going anymore, but because we kind of also got started around the same time, he became a very close friend, and then he would play drums with me at shows. He became a very close friend, and we kind of went through a lot of the same stuff together in the music industry, which was awesome. So he's always been a close friend. He lives in Sri Lanka now, but we chat a lot.
Oh, that explains why I haven't heard from him.
Yeah, that's it. There it is.
Sri Lanka? What's there?
His brother owns a hotel there, this awesome hotel, this awesome spot there in Sri Lanka. And Josh went there to set up a studio so that like bands can go and do like recording retreats or songwriting retreats and stuff. Because apparently a lot of people are going to Sri Lanka now. It looks amazing. Not now, before.
Not before.
The world went crazy.
And did that work out for him, that studio?
Yeah, apparently been great. So he's got the whole studio there. Someone, I don't know which of the two, but one of the guys from Massive Attack was there. But I mean, I don't know if it was a coincidence or what. But I mean, I think it's a lot of people happen to just stumble upon that area of Sri Lanka. So it seems good. So maybe we can go do a podcast there one day in the studio. Me too. But yeah, Josh. So that's Josh. He's great. And favorite. You said, what kind of music do I listen to? What music am I listening to? So if you were to look on my phone, someone I've been loving is Dayglo. Do you know Dayglo? It's one guy from. It's like a super. It's the kind of band that like Albert would listen to. It's like it's like they're this cool band that no one really knows about.
Is it GLO or GLOW?
GLOW, Dayglo.
Dayglo, okay.
DayGlow. Very cool. It's this one guy as well, and he just writes. It's not pop songs, but it's like he writes like alternative-y kind of like left field songs, but in a pop song way. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know how he does it, but the guy's amazing. Mm. Otherwise, I love Frank Sinatra, and I chose a Frank Sinatra song in our death match that we did on the eye.
I think it's so weird. Sinatra is one of those people that when you're a kid you hate him, and when you get older you suddenly recognize, oh,
he's a genius,
totally cool, greatest fucking delivery of every word is perfect,
every single
unbelievable
every little syllable. Yeah, he's a complete genius, man.
What about if you're in that world at all, do you have a take on Nina Simone?
Nina Simone. I don't think I even know who that is. Simone.
Fuck off.
Feeling good. Oh, what? Oh, okay.
Are you kidding me?
See, I can't claim Frank Sinatra and not know other people.
Scandal!
From there we go.
Right. This is the scandal headline. Oh, Matthew Mole confesses doesn't know who is Nina Simone.
Oh, this is bad.
This is bad. This is a real scandal that you've done now.
Oh, no. And it's a legitimate scandal.
No, this one is a scandal. You're done. This is a career pivotal moment for you.
No. Nina Simone. I'm not sleeping tonight. I'm going to listen to every single song a million times. So that morning I can wake up and say. I mean, I do know Feeling Good. Wait, do I know Feeling Good?
No, you'll know a lot. I mean, you must know.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Okay. No, okay, cool. I recognize a lot of them. But I mean, everyone knows Feeling Good, but a lot of the song names, I maybe don't recognize any, but maybe I'll know them without knowing that this is who she was.
This is the thing I think about Sinatra, about Nina Simone, and people like even Elton John.
Yes.
That
people know their songs.
As you get older, they get old. They get old and they die. And you think, yes. Frank Sinatra, old.
Yes.
But the older you get, you check how fucking hip they are.
Yeah.
You forget that Elton John was like cutting edge, and that Frank Sinatra was so fucking, the chicks would go mad, and Nina Simone was a freaking genius, not the old crooner from the old days and the black and white days. She was badass. She was badass, you know. And I love that when you can discover that with these. And I have an obsession with all the current stars. Like, I'm giving up. It's the whiskey. As soon as the whiskey comes in, it's like blah, blah, blah. Part of my agenda on this show is to get cool, amazing people like yourself on. But my real thing is I get on all the old guys.
Yes.
I try and bring the audience to them, because the old guys are the fucking coolest, and their stories are crazy cool, and they're still
totally, man. Yeah. They are the hippest, actually. They know what is hip. Yeah, that's awesome. Man. Yeah.
Are you a James Brown fan at all? Do you know who that is?
I know the name.
Kidding me.
You said James Blunt. No, I'm joking. James Brown. So now you see this. Obviously I know James Brown. Yes, but this is what's embarrassing is that I have Google or search them, and then I'll be like, oh yes, no, I know this.
People like what they like. There's nothing.
Yeah, I guess that's true. People like what they like, but there's also certain people that you have to know. Surely.
I'm judging you harshly because I needed a scandal and I got one.
You got it. You can just keep asking me about more of these legends that I don't know, and you'll have a million scandals.
It's not your job to know. Your shit is your shit, you know?
I guess. But it's like these people are legends. Like, they are why certain genres exist, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, oh well.
You said it, not me.
Yeah. I know. That's fine. I'll take it. I'll take that. I'm upset with myself.
How would your friends? I feel embarrassed now because these questions are coming out lame. I wanted to go deeper, but I haven't. Well, how would your friends describe you? How would your friends describe
me? They would say that I'm terrible at answering my phone. I'm terrible at communication.
Oh,
that's all they would say. I know for a fact that that's all anyone would say. Hopefully they'd say something good, but that would be the first thing you say. If you ask any of my friends anything about me, they'll be like, yeah, he's cool, but he doesn't ever answer his phone.
Everyone in the SM music scene is scared to go out with Matthew because he's an undercover mad dog.
Oh, that's
his wallet
for sure.
And his love of hand grenades, the shot, knows no limits. I and most of the members of Short Straw have almost lost our lives on more than a couple of occasions. You think we'd learn, but he's crafty. Tells you those days are behind him. Next thing, it's Tuesday night. You're in a family restaurant doing pre-dinner shots, canceling anything you had planned the next day and Googling the nearest karaoke bar.
Definitely Kyle. Oh, that's so good. Yeah, we went to Manila Bar once and we sang a million karaoke songs, a million Frank Sinatra songs, and that's probably what he's referencing there. But that's good to know. That wasn't a bad thing. He didn't mention anything about me not answering phone calls.
No. Well, I mean, that's just a quirk. That's just annoying. It's not who you are. I'm not answering calls. And I know that because my wife doesn't answer her phone either. And I've had to, it used to drive me fucking batshit crazy, but now I know it's not about me. It's about her.
Yes. Wow. That's amazing. Actually, the way you just put that, it's a quirk. It's not who you are. Oh, I'm going to tell that to people from now on.
Well, I'll give you some more for you. My wife and I, we had marriage counseling years ago. And that same advice was the thing, because what I'm now understanding, I think I know you, just from talking to you, and I think I know your character, because so I'm married to, I'll try and describe. I'm like a bit of a loud, busking, hustling dude, doing all the stuff in the world. Yes. My wife is an artist, a real one. You know, I'm playing in the world of art and making music. And she's the real deal. And I think you are as well, I'm sure. And her thing is about the craft and the art and all that shit. And the kind of world gets in her way a little bit, you know. And when we went to marriage counseling, I'm confessing a lot here. We used to fight, like smash guitars fight, like throw plates fight. And when we went into counseling, the counselor said something that changed our relationship forever. And she said, the way that she is has nothing to do with you.
Yes.
And she said to him, to her, the way that he is, because everything I do annoys her, you know, it's not about you. It's about him.
Wow.
And then I was like, okay, now I can deal with this shit. Before that, we'd have a fight and then we wouldn't speak for 3 days. Yes. Now we're like, oh, she's having her own thing. I must just give her some space and I'll come in.
Wow. That's such a good thing for every human to know. Wow. I mean, that simple. Wow.
I take it you've never needed marriage counseling yet.
We probably have. Probably have needed it. But no, I mean, I guess we've got a lot of people in our lives that tell us when we're being idiots. So that helps, I think. Maybe that helps kind of get to it quickly. but we haven't been to it yet. But
it's hard to be married, eh? People, it's a fucking thing. Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome, but it can be, you learn things that you didn't know existed, like about yourself and about how you see other people. So how you treat other people, basically. But it's awesome, though. It's an amazing thing, marriage.
Does your wife... Hey, okay, well, there's your can response. Thanks for that. what do you think... does your wife call you out and shit?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Well, not... I was going to say all the time, but not because I'm always messing up, but because she's kind of not scared to be like, yeah, listen, you were dumb when you did this or this and this and this. So I don't know. Yeah, she does. But she's very nice about it. And she doesn't make me feel like I'm getting scolded when she does that. She's an amazing communicator. Jess is her name. She's like the best communicator I know. She was a teacher. And so I think that also helps her. So she's got leadership skills and she's a really good communicator. And, so that's difficult sometimes because I'm not a good communicator and I've had to learn how to be a leader as well. So I don't know. She's amazing, man. So it's just, she makes it easier for me, but when she calls me out on stuff, she's good at it. She's way better than I am.
Do you work together on any projects, and if so, and could you?
Yeah, we totally could. We don't really. I mean, she's got a few businesses that she has that she runs on the side that we kind of work on ideas, because those are both like, I mean, those business ideas and stuff that she has that are happening are kind of both things that aren't her primary thing and also obviously not mine. So there's a lot of ideas that we come up with together for that kind of stuff. But other than that, we haven't really worked on a whole lot of projects together, but I think we would be good together. So cool. Mate, one day we'll do something. and you guys?
No, we tried to be in a band together.
Ah, that's a big project. And
that was bad. I wouldn't do it. We can't work together.
Okay. No, I wouldn't.
We love each other, but we can't work together. And that's something we know. We've tried. Yeah. It's just not going to. We're fire and ice over here. I mean, we are like yin and yang, sun and moon.
Yes.
It's
good. It's all passion. Sorry, you were about to say something else.
No, I wasn't. I'm just taking it in. You asked a big question. No. I was just.
Man.
Dude, I got to just tell you, I love chatting to you. I don't know why we haven't crossed paths more. I hope we do in the future.
Yeah, me too. I would be honored.
I appreciate your time so much, and I love what you're doing. I watch everything you do. I just love, you've got this thing. No one else has this little mad thing of like, I don't know how to describe it. Why I think you're going to be such a great producer is because I think your stuff is uniquely simple. Like you know how to find size in the simplicity of stuff. And that is a quality I don't see in producers, particularly most of our producers are trying to make things as big as possible. And you find size in the small little things. And I think that's really, awesome. Really cool. So I'd like to introduce someone.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'll give it a go then. Mm. Wow. Thank you. But that's really cool. I'm honored. Thank you so much.
No, I'm honored. Oh, I feel really honored. Thank you for your time.
No, man. No, your time. Thank you. This is amazing. And yeah, I would love, hopefully when the world is a little bit more of a normal thing, we'll do more in-person stuff like this. Some more death matches.
Let's do death matches. Death. I'm doing a really cool Tiny Desk concert series in Joburg over the next 8 months. I'll get you on that, definitely.
Oh, I would love that. I would be honored, please. That would be awesome.
And lastly, if you're ever in Joburg, I have an amazing studio there. I bought Daryl's old SSL and the studio around it. And it's a free studio.
Jeez.
So come and that's crazy. Come and play.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So I live in Joburg. I'm just in Cape Town at the moment for a few weeks.
I think I knew that you live in Emirates.
Yeah, just down the road. Yeah.
We've got such a great studio, and we built a culture hub for emerging artists to come and use. It's got YouTubing space, got SSL, it's got gear, it's got performance things, it's got live streaming gear, and you just pull in and play. It's cool.
That's amazing. Well, I would love that. So next time you're in Joburg and I'm back home, I would love to come check that out. Wow.
You don't need me. I'm just saying it's there for you if you want to use it.
thanks. Yeah. I'm totally going to go check that out. Wow.
Cool.
Amazing.
Matthew Moll, it's been such a pleasure. Love chatting to you.
It's been amazing.
Watching your success from afar, and may it continue. And lots of love to you.
Thank you. Really. Same to you, man. Thank you so much for the time. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this episode of What's Your Poison, you're pretty cool because it was fucking great. Do us a favor and subscribe either on the Apple Store, the Spotify Store, wherever you are. Leave a comment, please. Let me say it again because you probably just skipped over it. Just leave a comment because it helps with the ratings and I would appreciate it. Also, go to johnsavage.com if you want to see all the rest of the episodes, or subscribe to my newsletter. The end.